Nervy issue.
Listen, before we bring our next guest on the line, and he's John Henry Weston, the co-founder and editor-in-chief of LifeSiteNews.com, I have to have a fairly lengthy introduction because the story, the reason we're getting John Henry on is to talk about a lawsuit, and he is not allowed to talk about the lawsuit, but there's nothing, but he can talk about general issues surrounding the lawsuit and his important internet publication, LifeSite News. So I want to just sort of introduce John Henry first before he's even on the line, by talking about what's at stake here and the lawsuit. The lawsuit, LifeSite News is being sued for $500,000 by a Catholic priest. And LifeSite is a Christian Catholic perspective on the news, quite a socially conservative perspective. A Catholic priest is suing LifeSite for $500,000 for libel and slander. His name is Father Raymond Gravel. He's the Quebec priest and former member of Canada's Parliament who stated on a radio interview in 2004, quote, "I am pro-choice, and there is not a bishop on earth that will prevent me from receiving communion, not even the Pope." Then in 2008, Father Gravel defended the awarding of Canada's highest civilian award, the Order of Canada, to Canada's father of abortion. And that's the arch-abortionist.
I'm not sure you want to say father,
yes, right,
with abortion.
That's a good point. Yeah. Henry Morgenthaler. And during his political career, Father Raymond Gravel was rated as pro-abortion by the political arm of the pro-life movement. He was also repeatedly and publicly criticized. He repeatedly and publicly criticized his church's teaching on homosexuality and abortion. And even though LifeSite News reports have overwhelmingly reported on what Father Gravel himself publicly said, he's suing LifeSite for libel. Among other things, he argues that he isn't pro-abortion, but he has said in the past that he is pro-choice. He's demanding $500,000 in damages, which coincidentally is a full year's budget for LifeSite News. And obviously, if Father Gravel is successful, LifeSite will be put out of business. So it's a difficult time generally for anybody in the media these days, because I just learned today that BC Christian News is going out of business, published their last edition in February edition is the last one. We have, obviously, LifeSite News has grown rapidly in the last several years. It's an important, very newsy organization. I published an essay or two on LifeSite News a few years ago about Henry Morgenthaler, coincidentally. Remember that? Was that before we went to air? I had a big essay that I wrote about Henry Morgenthaler's correspondence with then Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau. So we want to talk generally about the issue of abortion, the Catholic Church, the law in Canada, and the importance of LifeSite News, and that we can talk about. So we can acknowledge the existence of this lawsuit, but we can't get into the details of it. So that's on the record now. So now we welcome to the show co-founder and editor-in-chief of LifeSiteNews.com, John Henry Weston. Hello, John Henry Weston.
Hi there. Good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. It's Terry O'Neill here with Carrie Simpson.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Terry and Terry.
Yeah. Terry and Terry, that's right. Now, LifeSite, tell us about LifeSite News. How long has it been in business and why it's important?
We have been online on the internet since 1997, and well, it has grown into probably one of the foremost news websites for the pro-life movement around the world.
For the which movement?
Pro-life.
Pro-life.
Movement,
yes.
Around the world, it's a great snapshot of what's going on a day-to-day basis around the world on this issue of life, family, the whole culture war, if you will, and it's very well appreciated by leaders throughout the world. It's read particularly by pro-life and pro-family leaders. And
well, you know, as a Canadian, where, of course, the abortion issue is not an issue until an election comes up, then somebody says, how dare he try to even suggest that this might be an issue. It's nice to see that in the United States, the abortion issue is alive and well, even if the aborted babies are not. So that's one of the things, as a pro-life activist myself, that reading LifeSite News, that sort of sustains me, because I know that despite the
prohibition
here
in Canada
that this issue is still very much alive.
But you know what? I want to, because it's something just went in my brain when you were saying, you know, the pro-life
magazine. I saw the light go on.
Did you see the light? Finally,
right.
The light.
That's right.
Woo, she's alive. But, you know, I've always viewed LifeSite, and I wouldn't limit it to the pro-life. I mean, the stories that you constantly bring to our attention, John Henry, are important. And as you say, they're more culturally inclined on a much broader scale than just the pro-life issues.
Absolutely. That when we started out more narrowly focused, but and that's hence the name LifeSite News. But as we continued on, we realized that the whole culture war the center, yes, is life, but it involves all the aspects of the culture war, mm-hmm. So the whole family battle, the battle within the churches, and all of that has really, you know, it's come to the forefront, and we're not going to be shy about keeping to one issue, as it were, or anything like that. So it's out there. We're out there. We're happy to be of service. And,
since we have your ear right now.
Bold and brazen is what I like.
Yeah.
Don't be shy. Bold and brazen.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, since we have your ear, John Henry, Carrie and I have talked last, Carrie now knows this is one of my big issues, and I come at it from a point of view of wanting to promote a culture of life. And that is, I've tried to expose the inanities, the insanities, the contradictions, the stupidity of the animal rights movement and the radical environmental movement, both of which I think at their essence are distinctly anti-life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written a lot about it recently for the National Post, and I write here in the Tri-Cities, Coquitlam, Port Coquitlam, about it, and we talk about it here. And there's not a lot on your site about that sort of stuff, and I think it's an area where we can, people who are interested in promoting a culture of life can educate the public more about the sorts of paths that they walk down to, which don't have a happy endings if they start treating, by the way, as one University of Victoria political scientist recently recommended, giving personhood rights to dogs. I mean, there's a lot of problems there. Anyway, what's your reaction to that?
Are you aware of this, John
okay.
Henry?
what's your reaction to my assertions of the last few minutes there, John Henry?
Well, it's great. I was just at a leadership meeting for pro-life leaders in Ontario over the weekend, and it was funny. One of the leaders was mentioning just that a couple had come forward to ask to be able to declare her unborn child a dog or a cat or something of that, because they would then have the protection of the Animal Rights Act.
Well, yeah, and it's humane laws, the anti-cruelty
exactly.
laws.
And so there would be protection in law for the child in the womb, because it would be protected if it could be declared an animal, would be protected under humanity.
That's part of that's exactly the sort of thing that I would take interest in, because that's exactly right.
The
unborn child has fewer rights than a stray dog.
Absolutely.
Or exactly. So that's the sort of thing that I think that we gotta give our culture a real shake, a wake-up call.
Absolutely. You know, I come at this from a different perspective. I'm actually a person of color. My mom was from East India, and I remember being in Winnipeg at a pro-life conference, and outside was a bunch of picketers, you know, doing their regular shouting thing, get your rosaries off my ovaries and all that. There were probably a group of them, 10 or 12 or so, in their 20s, and I went out to talk to them because I like doing that. I went out and asked, you know, I spoke, I think, to five of them, and the first five said, I don't talk to blankety blanks. So I figured I might not be doing much. But eventually, a girl said, "Okay, I'll talk to you." And
boy, that they put you in your place, didn't they?
Holy mackerel! What enlightened, progressive people they are.
Yes. Well, the girl was probably 22, 23, somewhere around there, and she went aside, and I went with her. And what happened then was rather strange, because immediately there was a little crowd around us and a camera shoved beside our faces, and I thought, "Oh boy, here we go." So. I let her start, and she began with, you know, "How dare you as a man tell me what I can do with my body, et cetera, et cetera." And so I let that go for a little while, and when she was done, I told her, I said to her, "Well, as a person of color, I'm against discrimination." And it was funny at that point, the look on her face changed from, you know, her adamant stand of "How dare you as a man," with that, you could tell, that snarky, you know, that fixated. She was expecting me to say, you know, something like, "You're going to go to hell, you're going to burn." And she was ready for that. She was ready to light into me if I were to have gone there or anything like that. But when I said, as a person of color, I'm against discrimination, it was like someone let the air out of a balloon. I continued to say, "Look, I was discriminated against when I was a child because I was colored, and I stand up for people who are discriminated against."
You know what? That you know, that inspires me, because I'm emotionally disabled, and Carrie will attest.
Do you want to sign it up?
Maybe I could use that line in the future when I'm getting discussion with somebody as somebody who's emotionally disabled. You know, that would take the wind out of people's sails.
Yeah. Well, the whole race thing has really. I mean, that still is the same. These people who come at sort of their pro-abortion stand, or as they like to call it, choice stand, come at it from women's rights, and they're into the whole, you know, anti-racist ed and all that. But when it comes to this issue, it's really funny, because our argument works far better than theirs, because I say, you know, "Look, I'm against discrimination based on race, but also discrimination based on size and age. And yeah, you know, the little unborn babies, yeah, they're really small, and they're really young, but that doesn't make them any less worthy of human rights."
You know,
and it was funny, you know, her response to that was, "Well, are you going to take the shirt off your back right now so I could afford an unplanned pregnancy?" And when it comes to that, I was, you know, praising the Lord, saying, "Okay, thank you. That's a great opener for us, because what? Life is worth more than money." So, you know.
I was hoping that you started to do the strip right there. That would have really got her.
Stripping her faulty logic apart.
You know what, John Henry, this is something that, and as a woman, I just, where in the debate did we lose that, yeah, it's my body, and I have a right to make a decision before I get pregnant? You know, why, you know, I looked, and I was lecturing once out at a college in the interior, and it was a group of very liberal, you know, radical feminists, and it struck me, you know, that these, you know, then of course one of the university educated teachers stood up and said, "It's my body, I have a right to do what I want with it, and I'm intelligent, I can make wise decisions." Well, you know, between all the sex ed and all the stuff that kids are involved with now, most children know where pregnancy comes from, all the rest of it. Why aren't women making the choice with their bodies before they get pregnant?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, this is something, you know, are they so stupid that their brain only kicks in after getting pregnant? I don't know, you know, but it's something that just, you know, Terry knows this, I'm an avid supporter of the pro-life, but really, the nonsense that goes on in the discussion and the debates from the other side just, you know, I just find myself biting my tongue, because I'd like to help them with their problem, you know, and that, you know.
Well, my response when somebody, when I'm talking to a pro-abortion activist or somebody who's just pro-choice and don't really know, and they talk about, they always do bring up the issue of it's a woman's body, she has the right to do with it. And it's to explain, now this may be too logical, but I explain that there are all sorts of laws, just laws, that as a society we wholeheartedly agree with, that limit the actions that people can do with their bodies. And for instance, it is against the law for me to move even this little finger, my index finger, a half of an inch. If that index finger happens to be on the trigger of a gun, and if that gun happens to be pointed at someone,
You know, so that's limiting what I can do with my body. I can't stand there and say the law has no right to tell me not to move my finger. It's my body. I'll bloody well do what I want with it. I do not have the right to do that. When that action can lead to harm against another human being. And you use exactly the same logic. Well, maybe this is where I fall down because, as I said, I'm emotionally disabled.
And
I tend to talk too logically. But that does seem to get traction now and again, John Henry.
That's one of the presenting syndrome or symptoms, is it, for being emotionally disabled is logic.
Too logical, yeah, that's right. But I'm trying my best.
I can't feel.
That's right.
But I think one of the things that happens nowadays is that arguments get shoved over to the hard cases. You know, we all used to remember the saying, and the truth, actually, that hard cases make bad laws. And everybody knows that rape and incest are the rarest things on earth, and they're hardly ever the case for abortions. But whenever we're actually doing legislation right now, it's always used the hard cases. Every time we want to pass a law, they wait for the cause celeb to happen publicly so they can float the new law, and all of a sudden the law passes. We had crazy driving laws go through Ontario with that when massive accident happened. Right away down came this huge law against driving at a certain speed with fines of $10,000, 5 years imprisonment type of thing. And all that goes down with, you know, these crazy cases that happen and they become the cause celeb. So the whole thing now is to go right away to the hard cases. So every time you think of, or the argument is made that can't you make your decision, always comes, well, what about when the decision's not made and it's rape and incest and so on? And so we actually on LifeSite, we love the hard cases because there is no, you know, way around the abortion argument with any case, because even in the hard cases, I remember one of the greatest lines I've ever heard on the issue of rape and abortion came from one of the old ladies on a picket line one time, where she was asked, you know, oh yeah, what about the cases of rape? And her response was so simple. It was, well, if you're going to kill somebody, start with the guilty rapist before the innocent child.
You know what? That,
brilliant.
And of course,
true?
This is
how
rational,
true?
It's logical, it's reasonable. That's a tremendous rhetorical rebuttal. And I am worried, though, that our society generally has, and I encounter this in discussions all the time, even with some supposedly well-educated university graduates who really cannot sustain a logical discussion where we're a fact, you know, an argument, counterpoint, everything like that. I want to quote from something. Our friend Kate McMillan, who runs the website Small Den Animals, posted something earlier today from a delightful essay by Clark Welton in the City Journal, and sort of the decline and fall of American English, which I think speaks to the inability of people to comprehend and to discuss and use rhetoric. And here's the essay, just a paragraph from it. I recently watched a television program in which a woman described a baby squirrel that she found in her yard. Quote, and he was like, you know, hello, what are you looking at? And stuff. And I'm like, you know, can I, like, pick you up? And he goes like, brr, 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 brr. And like, I'm like, you know, whoa, that is a wow. And a quote, she rambled on, speaking in self-quotation, sound effects, and other vocabulary substitutes, punctuating her sentences with facial tics and lateral eye shifts. All the while, however, she never said anything specific about her encounter with the squirrel. John Henry Weston, does that paragraph sort of describe our popular culture these days? And if it does that help explain why it's hard for people who, you know, make a lot of sense and speak well and present good arguments to have their points sink home?
I hope that we haven't yet descended to the TV commercial culture, which can't allow for any thought any longer, and it's just based on 30-second bites of information and visuals and stuff. To a large extent, I know that we're there for some of the population, but I still hold out great hope. I'm an optimist, although many people would think otherwise. I'm hoping not. I can see that, though. The tendency is there. With the lack of reading that goes on today and reliance on television, video games, et cetera, that's a danger.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely hoping we're not going there.
Yeah. Well, I know that you're part of the movement that wants to educate, and so are we here at Roadkill Radio. Perhaps we try to do it with a little more entertainment factor as well, but that's the nature of the medium.
That's the nature of having to work with somebody who's emotionally disabled.
Well, you know,
you got it, Carrie. Very good. That was good.
That's right. Thank you. So, a very nice rhetorical reply there, Carrie. So you don't fall into the category of people who are unable to hold a logical or rational discussion. Not that I ever would.
I've got to come up with
anyway.
My syndrome. I don't know, Terry.
Right.
I'm feeling left out now.
I
don't have a label like you.
No,
do.
I know.
You need to help
right.
me with this.
Okay, so we'll build on this as we go along in the weeks to come. LifeSight News is the lawsuit that Father Raymond Gravel filed against you, an existential threat to LifeSight. Is it that big?
Could be. The reason being, as you mentioned at the top of the program, it's $500,000, which is our annual budget. And therefore, that plus the costs of fighting a lawsuit, which could go very long, could be crippling for us. One of the things, for instance, our first court date was Thursday, and our lawyer was all day in court arguing just a preliminary motion to try and move the court venue from Joliet, Quebec, which is a small town, to Montreal, which is a much larger place where English is more readily known, I guess you could say. And that was unable to be reconciled, even that.
Wow, so all day, one lawyer, and we know how much, $300-$400 an hour. So a big thing, and I know that on your website you've asked for support, and well, before we finish the interview this evening, we will remind people how they can support. Let's get into the issue that's, without specifically talking about Father Raymond Gravel, about the Catholic Church itself. Is there a liberal wing in the church that's soft on abortion? Take it away, John Henry.
Wow. To say no would be a lie.
Okay.
That's a difficult question also, because when you're soft on abortion, are you still Catholic? That's an actual question.
Are there priests in the Catholic Church in Canada who feel uncomfortable talking about abortion to their congregation, who think that LifeSight News is being too divisive in its reporting of the abortion issue?
Wow, I think it'd be easier asked the other way if there are any that are comfortable. There are many that are comfortable, thank God, and very many excellent priests. But the difficulty is that there are very many who are totally unwilling to raise this issue, and some of whom are in fact embarrassed of their church's stand on the issue, and that's extremely unfortunate.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's not, you know, coming from the non-Catholic point of view here, you know, that's not reserved just for the Catholic Church. We're seeing that kind of division throughout Christian churches, you know, and increasingly, you know, people are saying, you know, our church is not equipping us. They don't even know the issues, those kinds of things. So I don't think it's limited just to within the Catholic Church at all.
Yeah.
There is one difference in this respect. In the scriptures, it seems extremely clear that God wants us to choose life. I have set before you death and life, choose life. I have formed you in your mother's womb before you were there. I knew you, etc., etc., etc. And first and foremost, the first command God ever gives is be fruitful and multiply. So you'd think it'd be pretty clear from the scriptures that you're to be pro-life. However, people do argue about it. People do say, hey, abortion is never even mentioned in the Bible. Come on. So there is an argument that goes on there.
Mm-hmm.
In the Catholic Church, however, it's defined in its catechism, the book of beliefs, if you will, that you have to hold if you're going to call yourself a Catholic, or you're supposed to anyway.
Yeah.
And there it's spelled out. There's no way you can really say, oh, I'm not going to be for the criminalization of abortion and still be Catholic. The catechism actually spells out that you've got to.
Now, I'm remembering a controversy at LifeSite News was in a couple of years ago where it pointed out that a Catholic charity that was doing work in third world areas was soft on abortion. That there were people in the church here in Canada that were very critical of you, and there was a big controversy. Can you, Phil, I can't remember all the specifics of it, but I thought it was one of your better moments with LifeSite News, standing up and producing the evidence.
That is what we try and do. I mean, all we do is search out and find and publish evidence that that happens and that goes on. We noticed, actually many years ago, but again a couple years ago, that Development and Peace, which is sort of the charity arm of the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops, was indeed funding groups around the world that were, as we call it, pro-abortion, or you might call it pro-choice. And it was interesting because these groups did other things. They, you know, some of them helped women, in poor women, get out of their poverty and help them with achieving, settlements for divorces and getting out of bad relationships, etc. Some of them helped women get, higher in the workplace, etc., etc. But very many of these groups were actually promoting abortion as well. Some of them fighting the local Catholic bishops on the issue of, decriminalizing, if you will, abortion.
Right, and you guys pointed that out. You had all the evidence.
Absolutely.
And yet there was a hue and cry in Canada, in the Catholic Church in Canada, with all sorts of people, up to, I think, the rank of bishops, that were talking about, well, no, you're not being fair, you're being too divisive, it's not true that this organization da-da-da-da-da-da. And what was the final outcome of all of that?
Well, the outcome still isn't final, but it was rather funny because you had, at the same time, you had some bishops denouncing us far and wide, and you had, at the same time, quite a few bishops, particularly in Ontario, actually, and British Columbia, making changes to the way they dealt with Development and Peace.
Right.
And so that was very interesting. They didn't quite come out publicly and say anything the way they had years ago. There was a previous incarnation, if you will, of this whole debate in 2000. In 2000, the LifeSite News happened again upon the fact that Development and Peace and the Canadian Bishops' Conference was funding something called the International March of Women. And the whole of the U.S. Bishops' Conference refused to fund it because, while it was, of course, pro-woman, which was great and wonderful and for the women's vote and et cetera, et cetera, it was, however, also pro-abortion and pro-lesbian. So the U.S. Bishops' Conference totally avoided it and did nothing for it. In Canada, however, we discovered a donation from the Canadian Bishops' Conference through Development and Peace for this organization. And when I first called them, we were told it was a $10,000 donation, just little pittance. In fact, it turned out to be a $135,000 donation. And the weirdest part was, at the time, in the year 2000...
Well, you know what, John Henry, you know, I'm not a Catholic, but they could hire me as a consultant to help them be good Catholics.
Carrie, that would be just great. In fact, I would vouch for you anytime as a non-Catholic. That would be just great.
Yeah. The pretty amazing stuff. So,
wait, you know, I've got a question for you, John Henry. You know, I'm sitting here because I appreciate the good work that you guys do. I mean, you stand for truth, you're bold and you're brazen. You know, how do you measure your success? I mean, you know, being, you know, causing a little angst and for a few bishops here and there has to be telling you you're doing something right.
Well, it's hopefully not measured in terms of causing angst for bishops. I know that the successes really are, well, for me personally, it's measured by being faithful. My faith life means as much to me as anything. In fact, it means everything to me. And that's really where I strive, is to be faithful to my faith. But in terms of success, as you can see it, there's a lot of neat little things. There was a university in Manitoba that was going to deny a med student his degree because he wouldn't participate in any way with abortion. At the time I learned about this, he was only 2 years into his program, and I asked, you know, could we help out with it? Oh, no, 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 my dad's a physician, there's no way this is going to be a problem. 2 years later, it was still a problem, and he was nearing graduation, and there was, you know, so they decided, okay, well, why don't we give the LifeSite route a chance, if you will. So we went public with it, and it was literally 2 weeks before
voila.
Something happened.
Yeah.
We had a similar situation in Toronto. There was a Catholic priest who, in the year 2004, I believe it was, or no, 2000, first, had done an affidavit in favor of same-sex marriage. When, at the time of the next marriage go-round in 2004 with Sven Robinson, he said publicly that, oh, look, I have an affidavit from a Catholic priest. And so we thought, whoa, okay. We woke up enough to try and find that one. So we went hunting, tracked down the affidavit, and published on this Catholic priest, who was then defrocked a few weeks later. The interesting part was, the bishop's office actually had known about that affidavit back in 2000, but no one ever said anything about it, so nothing happened.
Well, and so they're rewarding stuff to be able to accomplish things
well,
like that.
No, and there's a better exposing the fruitless deeds of evil, I think
wow,
it's called.
That's a nice line.
Yeah.
Listen, we have some correspondence. One of our viewers / listeners, Jane, responded to our discussion a few minutes ago about using how to respond to pro-abortion activists. And she says that a very useful thing is the SLED test, S-L-E-D, S standing for size, L for level of development, E for environment, D for dependency. And if you just bear with me for a minute, I'll just read this. Very good stuff. S, if somebody says, you know, abortion is good and we should allow it, you say S. Are preschoolers less valuable than teenagers because they're smaller? Are women less valuable than men because they're smaller? Size does not equal value. L, level of development. Is a four-year-old girl less valuable than her mother because she can't reproduce? Value is not determined by abilities. E, environment. Does your value change when you cross the street or even roll over in bed? Where you are, in the womb or out, has no bearing on who you are. D, dependency. Should we disqualify those who rely on insulin or heart pacemakers just because they are dependent? Viability does not determine worth. Good, very good little memory trick there. SLED, size, level of development, environment, dependency. Smart stuff. Thank you very much, Jane, for sharing that. And one
brilliant
other
audience, yeah, those yeah, roadkill
very good, very
roadies,
good.
Eh?
So one other thing I wanted to raise as well, I was reminded of this, John Henry, when you talked about that couple that was saying that or perhaps they should have their unborn child declared an animal that would have more protection that way.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something else. It's one of the strange things in our legal system here is that a fetus is not deemed a person until it is outside the womb, correct?
Right.
Well, yes and no. There are some laws, the tax laws, for instance, there are some provisions in law that recognize the unborn child. You
okay.
are aware of that,
I
right?
was not. Let's
yes.
talk about that in a minute. But here's this raises a rather interesting thing. You know, John Henry, that there are surgical procedures now where they can open up the womb, remove the child, operate on the child to fix some defect that they've discovered, and then put the child back in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
it would seem to me that the child, under Canada's legal system, the child in the womb is not a person. The moment the child emerges from the womb becomes a person. The moment that it's put back inside the womb becomes a non-person again. I would think at that moment of changing from personhood to non-personhood represents the biggest human rights violation that one could possibly imagine. And I would like to see someone launch a challenge based on that, maybe a court reference or something, trying to point out the absolute insanity of the legal system, or just pushing for the rights of unborn children or any child who is or any fetus that's operated on who has his personhood taken away from him under Canadian law. Crazy stuff, isn't it? Crazy.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. It actually reminds me of that film, I believe it was called A Distant Thunder. And it harkens back to the idea of what difference does it make in that few inches down the birth canal? Because in Canada, of course, abortion is legal up to and including the day of birth. So what difference does it make down that birth canal, that few inches there, to get out of the womb? And A Distant Thunder, the film was about a court case where it was partial birth abortion, and you know how that goes. They pull out the unborn child in breech position, leg first, and then leave the head inside the mother, puncture the back of the head, and suck out the brain so that the skull collapses, etc. And the weird part is, of course, according to law, if that child were to have emerged fully from the mother, it would be a child, and the abortion couldn't take place. It would be then murder. The doctor would be thrown in jail, etc., etc. And the court case goes, the doctor does the procedure, brings the child out except for the head, is holding the head in with his fingers, ready to grab the scissors, accidentally moves his hand, the child falls out. And the doctor quickly picks up the child, puts the head sort of back in, if you will, and carries on with the procedure.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, is it murder or not murder?
It's murder.
And that was the question, but it was a very interesting film because it pulled out that insanity and just put it
out. Oh, yeah, that's very similar to the point that I raised.
Absolutely.
John Henry, we're getting close to the time that we have to move on. Before we do so, I would like to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners and viewers how they can support LifeSite News and the important existential, very existence at stake, a lawsuit that you are facing right now.
Well, that'd be great. Everybody can go to lifesitenews.com. There you will see very clearly we have a place where anyone who wishes to can donate. We also would encourage you very much just to subscribe to the emails, just to get them to take action. We have a neat little thing at LifeSite News, which we do. When we put out stories, we will often put out stories so that people who wish to take action on the items or the story that's presented can do that. We'll put email addresses, telephone numbers, fax numbers, etc., on the bottom of stories so that should people wish to voice their concerns, wish to voice their thanks on certain things, can just do that. And it's sort of convenient. And there are a whole bunch of sort of armchair activists that take a lot of action based on LifeSite News. Our mandate there is to educate and to activate.
Not excellent
so,
stuff.
There's that as well. People can subscribe via RSS feeds, through Facebook. Everything is there. If you could support us, especially at this time because of this lawsuit, we'd appreciate it very much. And if you can't do that for us, please do keep us in your prayers. In addition to the heavy financial toll, this is taking a toll psychologically as well. It's stressful. It's costing a lot of man hours in addition to our lawyers' man hours.
Right.
So your prayers and best wishes are most appreciated as well.
Thank you very much, and good luck and Godspeed to you and everyone at LifeSite News, John Henry Weston.
Thank you, Terry and Carrie. It's been a great pleasure.
Okay, great. As always, yep.
Good night.
Talk soon. Yep.
Thank you.
Another good stuff.
Good stuff. Another great guest, and well-spoken, well-informed, and definitely well-intentioned.
Well, yeah, and you know what? And I would just encourage all of our viewers out there, you know, go to the LifeSite News website. Do subscribe. You know, I'm just thinking as John Henry Weston was talking,
you know, so often we link their stories to issues that we're talking about here, in addition to what we're talking about. You
it's
know,
a tremendous resource.
You know, it is truly about the culture of life and protecting the culture of our life, the issues that they take on and the perspectives that they bring. So good work. Support them. Help them out with this lawsuit, people. Together, you know, we will stand and we will win.
You know, I'm going to make a little confession now, and that is that we've had two guests on tonight so far, Lowell Green and John Henry Weston. I've got all the time in the world for Lowell Green. I think it's all hats off to him for doing the work he's doing. And he's a great guest, and it's an important book, and we have to look at this issue. But I'll tell you, Carrie, nothing strikes closer to the reason that I'm doing this show, and the reason that I'm doing all the things that I do in the community and so much what I write about. Nothing is more important than the issues that John Henry Weston raised. Mm. And it's not to say that I don't think the multiculturalism and immigration issue is unimportant. I think that's important. There's a lot of important. And our next guest is another incredibly well-informed person who has very, very good points to make on important issues. But, Carrie, the issues that LifeSite News deals with strike the very core of the reason that I'm doing what I'm doing in the public sphere today.
Well, you know what, Terry, as you were saying, because I knew what you were going to say about the issues involving life, and this goes to what I think Lowell Green was talking about, and it is our cultural identity. And our cultural identity right now here in Canada allows for our most vulnerable members in our world to be killed.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that say about this nation? What does this say when people don't know what the laws are on about abortion? What does this say when our society becomes so disposable that babies can be disposed of and have less value than animals
than
in our
animals.
Society?
I know.
You know, that's not a very good commentary on this nation, people.
No.
And that has to change.
I agree. And that's, Carrie, and I know that's an incredibly important, and it's at the root of part of the whole, that whole concept,
you know,
is at the root of why you're doing this show as well.
You know, and I always say this, you know, for us women, you know, within our wombs we give birth to nations, and within our arms those nations are nurtured, Terry. We as a civilized community and a society have a very important role to start speaking up and ending the insanity on all of these fronts. You know, this nonsense about cutting the umbilical cord, whether you're going to be a person or not in law, ridiculous. You know, whether you're going to have media events over 100 dogs dying and not 400 babies being killed every, you know,
yeah,
in Canada.
Yeah, I know.
You know, not, you shouldn't be tolerated.
Good.
There
I
we
agree.
Go. We,
thank
we're
you,
probably
going
to have a good rant on this one
that's
day.
That's right. Well, yeah. We're not, I mean.
One day.
I mean,
no, we're, that was just a very calm discussion.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that, and thanks for indulging us out there, and we have several more emails that we had based on our last guest, a couple from Mr. Chapman and another one from Ron, and we'll have to get to those at another time.